depends on this great but nippy St. Patrick's Day. I want to go to Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who is the Executive Director of Catholic Charities of New York, who has been appointed as aide to the Grand Marshal today, a friend of some at least three, if not more, decades. I welcome you, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Adrian, thank you so much for having me on, and thanks. I'm just delighted to be able to kind of talk with you on St. Patrick's Day.
Well, thank you, too. And you can give a shout-out to your ancestors and your ancestral track to Ireland, too, since we are broadcasting in Ireland. Monsignor, the dedication of the New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade to Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York, that is actually a great tribute, and some would say long, long overdue. But what are your feelings with respect to the dedication?
I think the dedication is marvelous. It's marvelous for a couple of reasons. One is that the St. Patrick's Day Parade is one of the premier kind of events in New York City. It is arguably, I think, probably the largest St. Patrick's Day Parade in the world, and It may well be the largest parade in New York City. And so for that parade to kind of dedicate, be dedicated to Catholic Charities, which is one of the premier organizations helping people in New York City, it's just such a perfect fit on our centennial. So I think that's the first reason. The second reason is that, boy, there's a lot of contributions that the Irish and Irish Americans have made to this country and to the New York metropolitan area. But one of those contributions is the tradition, the legacy of charity and involvement in charitable causes. So it's so fitting that the St. Patrick's Day Parade, which celebrates Irish culture, Irish heritage, kind of is dedicated to Catholic Charities because the Irish legacy is being involved in so many charitable causes. And so for those two reasons, I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful kind of dedication.
Yeah, and again, the centennial is such a special year, considering that it's a good job it didn't clash with last year for the centennial of the Easter Rising. But again, that brings us back to, again, St. Patrick's, the establishment and indeed the beginning of the awareness of St. Patrick's that brings us back long before the famine. But even maybe that would be a good place to start with respect to the old St. Patrick's Cathedral, the current St. Patrick's Cathedral, which is the icon of New York.
Well, the current cathedral is, as I think probably your listeners know, is kind of one of those things. It's kind of parallel a little bit to Alaska, because in Alaska they thought it was a folly for that to become part of the United States. It was so far away, and why would anybody want to go there? They didn't have any resources. Well, when St. Patrick's Cathedral was built, it was out in the country, and people said, well, why is the Archbishop building the cathedral up there because it's so far away? Well, boy, you go 100 years later, it's not far away. It is in the center of New York. And so that cathedral, I'm told, is either the second or maybe even the first most popular places for tourists to come to New York, and that it's named after St. Patrick, the patron of the Archdiocese of New York, is just such a fitting testimony.
The old St. Patrick's Cathedral, the which was, again, that would have been, you know, pretty much center, if not north, of the urban environment when a lot of immigrants came. The parishioners, the immigrants, and to a great degree, the Irish immigrants, specifically women who came from Ireland, they did their fundraisers. They collected the and contributed some of their very meager revenue and income to the building of St. Patrick's Cathedral as well.
Yes, I mean, in one of the real kind of legacies of the Irish in New York is that oftentimes great things happened because many people contributed what they could, whether it be their money or whether it be their volunteering, whether it be their intellect, whether it be their spirit. And from the contribution of so many different people, great things happened. And there's probably no better building that is testimony to that than St. Patrick's Cathedral on Fifth Avenue.
I would like to, for the benefit of our listeners throughout the world, tell us about Catholic Charities just give us a synopsis of the progress over the 100 years.
Well, let me just say it in one way that I think describes in a tagline what we're about. And we're about providing help to non-Catholics and Catholics alike and creating hope. And why that sums up with what Catholic Charities is about is because we provide the help in such a way that it respects the dignity of the person. And the dignity of the person means that we're trying to help them to have a better, a more hopeful future. So when we serve somebody at a food pantry, we're so grateful to do it because there is a need and we can meet it. But we want to create hope in that person's life that with other assistance, maybe they don't have to come back so often to the food pantry. Maybe they can move forward so that they can live a little bit more independently. So I would say at the core of the value of Catholic Charities is that dignity of the human person, which means that we provide help in a way that it empowers people to live their lives more independently with a more hopeful future. So that's an overarching theme. I can tell you, listen, Adrian, we kind of serve almost every human need. We focus on children, families. We focus on those who are hungry, those who don't have a decent place to live. And we support those who maybe have a physical disability, they may have an emotional challenge, to enable them to live their lives with dignity and as much independence as possible. And I have to end by saying that we also are at the forefront of welcoming immigrants and refugees to these United States. And there's never a time in which it has been more important that we provide a welcoming, a supporting, a loving welcome to newcomers to New York and the United States.
I first met you, what is now, or got to know you, believe it or not, 33 years ago, with the establishment of Project Irish Outreach and Catholic Charities, when I was invited by your predecessor, Monsignor James Murray, at the will of Cardinal O'Connor to establish a project, an Irish outreach program at Catholic Charities. Many at that point, Monsignor Sullivan, said, why? The Catholic Charities, Irish Catholics, are well able to take care of themselves. Look at all the other people. You will remember that not everybody felt that with the work of Catholic Charities during that period, Catholic Charities was considered somewhat akin to a welfare programs. I don't think many people recognized or even knew about the, you know, approximately 90 agencies and programs which you run throughout the 10 counties of the Archdiocese.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great values of Catholic Charities in New York is that we are a federation of locally based Catholic charitable organizations, as you said, some 90 of them, that extend all the way from the tip of Staten Island all the way up through the lower Hudson Valley. And one of the great values is that many of them are deeply rooted in local communities. They know the needs of those communities and that they can respond to those needs. And Adrian, as you said, I think one of the things that is really important is that, yes, most of our programs, we have a preferential kind of option to help those who are most vulnerable, many of whom are economically poor, but we don't exclusively serve those. And as you know, Adrian, many of the immigrants whom we serve are among the most industrious, the most hardworking of the people in the New York metropolitan area, and clearly among those are the Irish immigrants who have come here. And Adrian, I do have to, as you mentioned, my predecessor, Catholic Charities wouldn't be where it is today without his leadership for almost a quarter of a century and the concern for immigrants, yes, Irish immigrants, but Monsignor Murray was among those who helped the children who were left orphans by the fall of Saigon going back to the end of the Vietnamese War. So our welcoming of immigrants extends, yes, to the Irish, yes, to those from Central and Latin America, and yes, people from Asia and Africa also.
Let us clear up for those who may not be aware. Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York, not only do they not discriminate, but you probably take care of a much higher percentage of non-Catholics. Religious background, not an issue.
Not an issue at all. And quite frankly, you know, we don't even ask people what their religion is. And, you know, but I can tell you that some of our programs, because of the neighborhoods that they're located in, probably do serve more people who are non-Catholic. Some of our other programs, because of the ethnic communities that they're in, maybe most of them might be Catholic. But for us, we believe that everybody is made in God's image and likeness. And so, as we like to say it, we serve people because we're Catholic, not because they are Catholic.
There are some areas which, from once you get involved, I know you have already spoken about getting people back on the feet, getting them to a more hopeful and better life. There are areas where you're on the hook for decades and can be. For instance, resolving family crisis, your support for the physically and emotionally challenged. That is something that is amazing. Because it's not a once-off. This is not like a visit to a hospital. What and where and how do you manage to keep engaged with those who are not going through a short-term crisis?
Sure. Again, Adrian, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, our services are sometimes very intensive and very deep. And you mentioned there are some of those whom we serve, who we're going to be serving for the rest of their lives, those with very severe and persistent mental illnesses, those with severe developmental disabilities. And so we have residences, which we like to make them as home-like as possible, where people can have a secure place to live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that is going to be very long-term. But I have to tell you, Adrian, even in those situations, our goal is that those individuals fulfill to the best and the greatest extent possible their potential. Now, granted, it is certainly, in many cases, more limited. But even there, we want people to have dignity. We want them to be able to be as self-sufficient as possible, which is oftentimes they need a lot of structure and a lot of support. And so that's one of those intense services that we do. And then on the other extreme, we provide somebody a meal at a soup kitchen. Or we may answer a phone call. We answer, you know, Adrian, 25,000 phone calls a year for newcomers to New York, immigrants and refugees, providing them with timely information, accurate information mm-hmm. about how they can live their lives, understanding what's going on in the immigration sphere. So full range, very intensive, like some of those residences, and then maybe a quick phone call to give somebody the right piece of information where they can get the help they need.
The rumor mill changes by the day, and whereas if we even go back to the establishment of Project Irish Outreach some 33 years ago, where the Cardinal and indeed Catholic Charities paid particular attention to the undocumented Irish who were, you know, just thrown to the winds, and it was assumed, as I mentioned before, that they didn't need any assistance. The current situation, the uncertainty, the fear of those who are living in the shadows, the moral dilemma that many of them, you know, face as well. Is there a concentration? Is there a place within Catholic Charities to at least give the? I know you've said you're a phone call away, or you can do.
Right.
What can you say that will lessen what is the reality of a very critical, situation that we find ourselves in now?
Right. Adrian, we think that immigration policy should be fact-based and reality-based. So one of the things that we are doing is getting the facts out there on the telephone and in presentations. We have done or have scheduled 95 presentations in different community groups, in parishes, at universities, to let people know what the reality is, because there are too many rumors, there's too much fear-mongering, there's too much people agitating, and that creates even greater anxiety for our immigrants. Now, let's make no mistake about it. Some of the executive orders that were issued by the president do cause real consternation,
mm-hmm.
and they really are so broadly drawn that depending on how they get enforced, they could make things very, very difficult for some immigrants who are here. And so we don't want to pretend that there isn't real anxiety, there isn't real concern. But on the other hand, we don't want to hype that so that people are paralyzed. One of the other things we've done, we've said to any parish, any school, any Catholic charitable agency, if somebody is approached by an immigration enforcement agent, we have on call an attorney or attorneys 24 hours a day who will call those individuals back in order to provide them with immediate advice, and also a social worker who will call them to provide them with guidance on what they should do to make sure that they can respond appropriately in those situations. So this is not an easy time. This is a very difficult time. We are very, very concerned. We want immigrants to know that we stand with them, and we want to work with anybody who's going to make what is a very tense, a very confusing, a very anxious situation, one that is less so.
Monsignor, I would like to just again, as we speak of rumors, you will well remember that with respect to the undocumented, going back those decades, they were barely a step above refugee. They were here, and for all intents and purposes, they were refugees. They were not entitled to any benefits, and we know all of the disadvantages that occurred. What does the church's position or the archdiocese's position with respect to families that are in fact split, those who where you have parents who perhaps did not divulge to their children, many of them for very good reason, because they didn't want them going to school and talking about the status of their parents, and now are faced with, having to tell their kids that their status is such that they are under threat of deportation or unable to visit their homeland for even funerals or for any occasions. What is there a short answer? Is there something that the church and the Catholic charities can do to provide some level of support for people who find themselves in that situation?
Well, two things. One, the home or the centerpiece of the Catholic Church's advocacy on behalf of a fair and comprehensive immigration reform has always put the unity of families as the centerpiece, the highest priorities. So some of the rumors, or not rumors, but mm-hmm. ideas that have been floated about maybe it would deter people if we separated children from their parents, we just think that is no way to deter people from immigrating illegally. Separating kids from their parents is not good for the individuals, and it's not good for the communities in which they live. Strong families, intact families, make for better communities. So that's one thing that is really there. But we're realistic. There are many families in which the parents may not have all the right documents. The kids might be American citizens. So one of the things we have reached out to and are putting in place is advice on guardianship. And I really dread saying it, because parents do need to be prepared in case something happens. And how do they provide for their children mm-hmm. if, in fact, something happens to them? Now, we are working, raising our voices to the highest level, saying that's not something that we want our government to do. But realistically, we have to help people to be prepared.
Aid at large to the Grand Marshal, for you personally, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Oh, I'm just delighted. One of the reasons I'm so delighted is because the Grand Marshal is Michael Dowling.
I know.
And Michael is just, he's lent so much to this country. I think he's from County Limerick.
He sure is.
His contributions on the docks, his contributions to government, now his contribution to health care. I'm just delighted to be an aide at large to Michael Dowling.
We want to offer you our congratulations. And again, you did mention that there are social workers, that there are lawyers, that there are advocates for those who either fear or who get, that first call. What is the 24? Do you have that number?
Adrian, I don't have it, but I just tell everybody, go to our website. Mm-hmm. Catholic Charities New York, and they'll find the numbers right there.
Thank you. Congratulations, and again, for the work that you have done as executive director of Catholic Charities of New York, the continuation of that has never been more needed than now. I'm delighted to know you as a friend, and on behalf of so many, I am sure that next to Mike Dowling today, you can say for the reaction to the Grand Marshal, isn't half of that is for me.
Right. Well, Adrian, hey, it's always a pleasure to be on your show, and thank you for getting the word out on so many good things. And a happy St. Patrick's
and
Day.
And a very happy St. Patrick's Day to you, too. And friends, okay. You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.